Ja, kära lyssnare och vänner, och välkomna då till Arsenal Göteborg podcast. Och det här ska vi dra också, som jag sa så bra förra gången. Jag ska bara få upp det här. Nu är det live-letning på min telefon. Hej, vet du om det där? Ja, välkommen till Arsenal Göteborg podcast. En podcast av Arsenal-fans till Arsenal-fans för Arsenal-fans, där det är känslorna som styr. Och vanligtvis är det jag, Filip Tolf, och Tobias Johannesson som står mestadels för känslorna. Men idag så var tyvärr Tobbe tvungen att lämna sent återbud. Och då har vi ju vår älskade och Oskar Axelsson som är tillbaka från London där han var senast med Claude och Tai. Oskar, hej och välkommen till podcasten.
Tack så mycket. Härligt att vara tillbaka igen. Det var kul att få göra ett gästinslag för er fina podcast förra veckan.
Ja, det var väldigt uppskattat. Var det kul att sitta där med dem? Jag höll på att dö av garv när de, alltså de två, när de drar igång. Det är som ett gift gammalt par.
Ja, verkligen. Det är svårt att inte sitta och asgarva i en och en halv timme eller vad det blev. Och när jag sa till Tai att nu har det gått en och en halv timme. Oh, really? Ja, jag tror de hade kunnat prata hur länge som helst.
Men de gillar ju det. De gillar våra introfrågor också. Det gillar jag.
Du har aldrig blivit så hyllad för dina introfrågor.
Det är så jävla bra. Så jävla bra introfrågor. Så är intressant. Det är inte bara du och jag som ska sitta och prata Arsenal idag med våra känslor, utan vi ska även ha en gäst med oss via Skype. Vill du köra en snabb... Nu ska jag säga namnet.
Jag vet.
Jo, men jag kan göra. Andrew Arsblog Mängen ska vi snart ha med oss via Skype.
Ja.
För er som inte vet det, vi ska prata mer om det när han väl kommer på, så är det väl, rätta mig om jag har fel, Oskar, han som driver alltså världens största Arsenal-blogg helt enkelt, och Arsenal-podcast, så han är väl typ en gudfader till det vi sitter och håller på med just nu, kan man väl säga.
Ja, vi pratade lite om det innan där. Jag tror väl att Arsblogs första podcast spelade han in 2006. Man kan väl säga att han var lite före sin tid. Och bloggen har han väl kört sedan 2002. Och det är väl, jag tror nästan det är den största bloggen, alla sportsbloggar.
Är det sant?
Ja, jag tror det.
Ha, fasen var stort. Vad kommer du ihåg från Arsenal 2002, där han började bloggen?
2002 skulle... inte från hans blogg kommer jag inte ihåg någonting.
Nej, men inte från hans blogg, men säg Arsenal då. Om jag tänker något han kanske skulle ta med i bloggen när han började skriva.
Ja, han borde ju ha skrivit om våran fina dubbel, hoppas jag.
Ja, det är sant. Det var ju dubbel. Jag tänkte ju bara på segern nu han ligger på Old Trafford, men det är klart det var ju dubbeln det också. Ja. När Ray Parlour krita in 2... Eller var det 1-0-målet eller 2-0-målet i FA Cup-finalen mot Chelsea? Jag tror han satte han 2-0 och Ljungberg satte 1-0.
Jajamän, det tror jag ska stämma bra.
Ska vi fråga honom om det? Om han skrev om det i bloggen? Ja, vilket som var det första blogginlägget?
Ja, det är intressant att veta. Det tror jag inte många har koll på. Jag vet att jag själv har gått tillbaka och lyssnat på första podcasten jag gjorde, för jag tyckte det var lite nostalgiskt att gå tillbaka till första podcasten.
När var det? 2006?
Så, ja, om jag inte missminner mig så tror jag det var efter en Champions League-match mot Sparta Prag.
Vad kommer du ihåg från 2006 då? Alltså inte just från podcasten, men Arsenal 2006.
Ja, att vi gick till Champions League-final. Mm. Det var min första säsong när jag började kolla riktigt mycket på Arsenal. Jag började följa och se på matcher.
Ja, stabilt. Det får ju mig lite att tänka på vad du såg. Men du såg finalen?
Nej? Du hade den här antennen hemma britt på sig, så att var dåligt väder, så det blev ingen final.
God damn.
Så här i efterhand så vet jag inte om det gör så mycket faktiskt.
Jag såg ju finalen ihop med, det var jag, ett till Arsenal-fan, och så var det med min bästa kompis då som var Barcelona-fan. Den tystnaden säger det mesta.
Ja, jag fick följa den på text-tv, men det var en fantastisk resa fram till. Man har ju ändå fina minnen från den Champions League-säsongen. Inte minst Henrys mål på Bernabeu.
Ja, jävlar. Och på tal om Henrys mål på Bernabeu, så är det ju idag 14 år sedan på dagen som Henri gjorde målet mot Tottenham, som hans målgest senare blev staty utanför Emirates. Du förstår vilket jag menar.
Ja, det är väldigt
liknande mål där mot Bernabeu. Han har bollen, tittar upp. okej, okay, jag har ingen att passa. Jag dribblar väl av allihopa och lägger in en själv då. Typ så.
Ja, fast om man nu ska dra lite skillnad där så hade väl ändå Tottenham var väl på den tiden inte speciellt bra. De var ju, jag tror 2004 när vi vann ligan så slutade väl de på 15:e plats.
Men rätta mig om jag har fel, men var det en 1-0 seger? 1-0 till Arsenal, den Henri-målmatchen.
Det vågar jag inte uttala mig om. Men där, jag menar mer att matchen mot Real Madrid där så var ju då när Real Madrid
också.
När de myntade väl Galacticos. Ah, just det. Det var ju med Beckham och Ronaldo.
Det roliga thing, funny thing is att baksidan med Galactico var ju också att samtidigt som Real Madrid och hela en Galactico-grejen byggdes upp så köpte Real Madrid Thomas Gravesen. Nej. Den danska pilsnerdrickaren.
Ja, det säger man faktiskt inte så mycket.
Nej, inte?
Nej, nej, okay. Men en enda danska pilsnerdrickaren jag känner till, det är Lord Bentner.
Ja, ah, just det, på tal. Ah, fan, fin koppling. Men du har ju en kaffekopp framför dig med en kanna kaffe. Det lät ju väldigt mycket. Vi ska sitta uppe hela natten här, förstår ni, lyssnare, så vi behöver mycket kaffe. en Arsenal-kopp, så jag föreslår att vi häller upp lite kaffe och så när vi kommer tillbaka så har vi då förhoppningsvis Andrew Arsblog mängen på andra sidan luren. Så be till teknikgudarna så tar vi en kopp kaffe så länge. So, here with us on Skype, we have, like we talked about earlier, Andrew Arsblog. I do this thing. So what do you call this in English, Oscar? Like I do now. You don't see this because no. This is a podcast. Situation, yeah. Thing. Arsblog Mengen. Hello, nice to see you. Hear from you.
Hey, nice to be here.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm coming to terms with the fact that winter is approaching and it's quite wet and horrible outside, but I don't want to make it sound like I'm a victim because you guys get much worse winters than we do. So
yeah, but it sounds like you describe Gothenburg, because Gothenburg like right now has been raining for what, a week?
Oh,
and it seems like it's gonna rain for another week. So I know what you're saying.
Yeah, we have the rain. We don't necessarily have all the snow that you guys get. So, you know, we can cope a little bit better, I think. But I think you're better set up for it over there. You know, you have nice warm houses and stuff, so.
Yeah, we also have this fur because all of the polar bears we kill.
Well,
no, just kidding. in the beginning of the podcast, I don't know if you listened to it, but I'm going to say it anyway. We have our introduction questions to the guest. Some of the questions are really good. Some of the questions are less as good. What do you say, Oscar?
Yeah.
So, are you ready, Andrew?
Mm-hmm.
This is for the listeners to, you know, get to know you.
Sure.
As an Arsenal fan. I know that pretty much every Arsenal fan in the world listen to the Arscast, or maybe should do anyway.
Yeah, they should.
Well, they should. Yeah, they definitely should.
Before we start, how rude of me. Do you want to make some good words for the Arscast or some commercial if it's someone out there who hasn't heard it or heard about it?
I don't know. Just listen to the Arscast. That's all I can tell you. It's good, I think. But it's basically just me talking nonsense into a microphone. So I think that's something you guys are
really
on board with. Yeah,
I can relate to that.
And we should vote for your podcast to be the best podcast for the podcast awards.
Oh, yeah.
That in the last podcast.
Yes, that's true. I think I win a gigantic trophy if that happens. So, you know, I measure my life in how many trophies I win. That's the only way you can know you're a good person.
Yep, I was about to do a bad Arsenal joke. I'm not gonna do that. I can still do it in a bad Tottenham joke.
Sure.
That they don't have as much as we do in the trophy locker. But the questions, Oscar, do you like to start with the first question, which is my favorite?
Yeah, this is Philip's favorite question, and it's simple. What's your name?
My name is Andrew.
Yes, I got the right one. It's actually happened one time that I called the guest the wrong name. And then
that's why you asked this question, just to make 100% sure.
Yes.
All right.
And the next question is actually three questions in one, and which I am very curious about is when, how, and why are you an Arsenal supporter?
When, how, and why? Okay, when is the 1970s?
Go on.
Because I was born in 1971, and the first Arsenal game I remember was the FA Cup final in 1979, so I guess I was an Arsenal fan before that. How? I'm not 100% sure. How and why here, they go a little bit together, so I'm going to mix them into one answer, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Go.
I'm Irish, and my parents are Irish, but they lived in the UK, in England. So I was born in England and lived in England till I was 10. We were always told as kids that we were Irish, you know. We were always reminded that we were Irish. But when you lived in England in the 1970s, there was, you know, a little bit of, not tension, I wouldn't say, but you were always called a paddy, or you were, you know, there was stuff going on at that time which made it not always easy to be Irish. But in the 1970s, Arsenal had a lot of Irish players, a lot of Irish players. There was Liam Brady, there was Frank Stapleton, there was David O'Leary, John Devine. Then there were the guys who were from Northern Ireland. There was Pat Rice, Sammy Nelson, Pat Jennings. So there was a huge Irish connection between, I guess, between me and Arsenal. And as somebody who was trying to find things that were Irish to identify with, and football, of course, was something that I loved and enjoyed, I think that's why it happened. There were so many Irish players there, and I was so trying to identify as being Irish that the two things just came together.
It's almost like, you know, when they had this lot of French guys in Arsenal. Similar to the when it was a lot of Irish guys back in the 70s, right?
Yeah, I guess there were probably generations of French Arsenal fans born during the Arsene Wenger era, of course, you know, with Vieira and with Petit, with Grimaldi, with Kabadiawara, of course, the greatest French player that we ever had.
Yes, I remember him. Yes, I do.
So, you know, you can understand how those things influence people, yeah.
One quick question. You talked earlier about your first game that you remember as a little kid. And before we called you, me and Oscar talked, which was the first, when you started with a blog and with a podcast, which was the first games then that you wrote about in the blog and talked about in the podcast? Do you remember that? Because we was
No, I don't remember. I know that the blog started in February of 2002, so it would have been sometime whatever game was happening around then. During that season when we won the double. So I don't remember specifically. I do remember one of the first games that I spoke about on the podcast was we were going to play Reading, and it wasn't long after Petr Cech had been injured by Stephen Hunt. Petr Cech was playing for Chelsea at the time. And I think it was in the first episode of the podcast where I rang up Reading Football Club and asked them if Jens Lehmann would need a crash helmet, which they didn't really, they didn't enjoy that much.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so I think that was the first game that the podcast was built around, I think.
I have a, because I've been listening to your podcast for a long time, so I actually went back to the podcast, and I think you talked about the Spartak Prague game as well, Champions League maybe.
Right, yeah, could be. Could be, because that would have been, it was October 2006, so yeah, we would have been playing Champions League football at that point. But look, I'll be perfectly honest with you. My memory is terrible. It's really, really bad. But, you know, because I do two podcasts a week and I write the blog every day and I'll chat to people and people say, oh, I loved that thing that you said that time on the podcast, or I love the thing, you know, the little sketch, or I love that blog post that you wrote about that. And I, you know, I'm like, what? I just don't remember a lot of the stuff, you know? So it's difficult for me to go back 10 years and try and remember something as unremarkable as who we were playing away from home in a Champions League game in October, you know?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, we can understand that. Yeah. So maybe let's roll on to the next question then.
Why not?
So Who was your favorite player when you started to support Arsenal or through all of your years as an Arsenal supporter, and who is your favorite player now?
My first real hero was Liam Brady. I never really got to see Liam Brady play very much for Arsenal. The year after I remember my first game, 1979, 1980, he went and joined Juventus. And of course, there was no real football on television at that time. You didn't get the coverage of football as you do. But Liam Brady, because he was Irish, because he was a special left-footed player, he was always my hero. I suppose in later years, Robert Pires. I think people know I'm a big, big fan of Robert Pires.
You know that.
Yeah, you mentioned that in the Ars cast.
Yeah.
And I love Pires as well. He's a pure genius.
Yeah. Yeah, so I might have mentioned that more than once, and
which is okay to mention more than once.
I think so. You know, we've got to share the love, don't we? We've got to tell people who we're into. That's all good.
Yes.
Who's my favorite player at the moment? Like, I love Mesut Ozil, and I love Alexis. I love what they do on the pitch. But you know the way. Sometimes you have a connection, a completely arbitrary connection with a player that not many people would think is realistic. Now, you're talking about a favorite player, not who I think is the best player, right?
So, yeah, favorite player.
Yeah.
Favorite.
So for me, I love Mertesacker. I love the guy. I think he's brilliant. I think he's been, A, really important for Arsenal, but B, he really understands, I think, what it is to be an Arsenal fan. You know, he gets it. And I know in this world of social media and all that kind of stuff, it can all feel a bit contrived. You know, you have agencies saying the right things for their clients on their Twitters and their Instagrams. But, you know, I think there's something very genuine about Mertesacker and the affection that he feels for the club. So he would be my big favorite out of the current squad anyway.
Didn't he give you praise for your blog about him once?
Yeah. I wrote a thing about like what my top five things were of all time, and I think it was beer, bacon, puppies, bourbon. I can't remember what the other one was, and I think I said Mertesacker got into the top five. So he did mention that on Facebook.
I can understand like, that.
Yeah, but, so look, that's a great list of things to be in the top five with. You know, bacon is great, puppies are great, bourbon and beer, they're great. And, you know, if the next one is Mertesacker, then that's good company, I think.
It's almost a thing that starts with B, if you spell Mertesacker BFG as well.
Yes, exactly.
And puppies, yeah. You can spell buppies.
Yeah,
just to make it a list.
That word somewhere in some other country, though.
Yeah. Next question. Best Arsenal memory through the years?
You know, there's so many that you have that you've kind of viewed from afar. You know, watching the invincible side, watching the team do the double. But I think just from a purely personal point of view, seeing Arsenal lift a trophy for the first time, which was the 2014 FA Cup final. That was the first time I'd ever been there at the moment that Arsenal won a trophy after 9 years without winning anything, and going through the emotion of that FA Cup final against Hull, where it looked so desperate for a while, and then we got back into it, and then we equalized, and then we had a great chance to win the game. Kieran Gibbs, I think, missed just before the end of normal time. We score in injury or in second half extra time. Then towards the end, there was that moment where, remember when Mertesacker fell over and Fabianski came out and the guy put the ball just wide. And just, I think, the emotion of that, the release of that, and just the celebrations of that going back to the Tollington, to a bar near the ground with all the Arsenal fans in such brilliant form, having won a trophy. I think that's right up there with that for me. It's not necessarily Arsenal's greatest achievement, but as a moment to experience as a fan, it was fantastic.
Funny thing, because I think we have some guests through the years, and most of the guests say that this is their favorite memory.
Yeah.
I I could easily say that's like the most emotional day in my life.
It was really something, you know. It was because there was so much. When you get you look at how that FA Cup campaign went, and you get Wigan in the semi-final, and you think, yeah, Wigan, brilliant. That's going to be amazing. And then you're 8 minutes from going out.
Yeah.
Win the game on penalties. You're like, holy shit.
Where Kim Schellström step up and
yeah, he did the business for us. And then
he
in
truly
the final,
did.
In the final, you're playing Hull, and you think it's Arsenal against Hull. You know, we're overwhelming favourites for this, which we were. But we, you know, in very Arsenal way, we made hard work of it. But you know, we got there in the end, and it was a fantastic day, a fantastic night. Afterwards, the celebrations went on. There was, I think, the next morning we had a big glass of rum for breakfast and started again. And you know, it was brilliant fun and great to see.
Breakfast for champions, like I used to say.
Yeah, exactly.
I can relate to that as well.
All right, next questions. Next question. This is actually a kind of new question to our introduction questions, but it's pretty easy. It's called rice and rose, which is a Swedish expression for the thing that you like most and the thing that you basically like least, so to speak. Right. So the thing that you like most with Arsenal and the thing that you like the least with Arsenal.
What's the thing that I like most? I guess the two would go together. You know, the football side of things is obviously really important. That's the whole meat and drink of it, isn't it? You know, this is why the club exists and why the team exists, is to play football and win matches and win trophies. But I think the thing that I like the most is the people that I meet, from doing this website, from going to games in London, from doing events, over there and doing events in America, for example, just meeting other Arsenal fans and knowing that there is this big, huge community of people out there who all share this passion. So whether you're from 5 minutes away from the stadium or whether you're from the other side of the world, you still share this passion about a football club, and making friends friends that I'll have for the rest of my life because of Arsenal and because of Arsblog is fantastic. So the football is hugely important, and I love when we win, and I love when we win things. But there's the other element of that, I think, which people lose sight of a little bit. So the thing that I like the least is when fans, when they divide unnecessarily. You know, you can have a difference of opinion with somebody about the football club and about the manager or about the way we play or about this or that or what have you. But what I really hate is when people get stuck into one box or the other. So you've got to be either Wenger out or Wenger in. You know, it's not.
I was just about to come to that. Is that a perfect example of this?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, the minute you describe somebody as, oh, you're a Wenger in, or a Wenger out, you can't have any discussion because you've just placed them in a box where you feel like their opinion has no nuance, or where they're so set in stone that there's no point even discussing it, you know? So that's the perfect example of that for me. And I wish people just in general would be a bit more understanding, a bit more open to other people's points of view, and to find a way to express differences of opinion which aren't so aggressive, right? They're not so divisive. You're not calling somebody a name just because they disagree with you. You know, you can listen and be open to other people's experiences and what they think. You don't have to agree. Nobody says you have to agree, but too often it descends into a kind of a fight or just an argument or bitching or people calling each other stupid names like they're in kindergarten. And for me, that's the worst thing. You know, thankfully, most people are able to do or to find the middle ground, I think. But there are some elements, there are some extremes on both sides of Wenger out and Wenger in that are just, there's just no point in even talking to them, you know?
I got no words. I got like goosebumps for what you just said. And the funny thing is, I made this to Oscar, and I will address the listeners to it. We're doing this with Skype, and I have your name on my computer, and I did, you know, with a heart through your name, because I thought you was really spot on.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, I can only agree with that. And one thing I would like to add is that's like one of the most annoying things is fans that tell you what to think.
Yes,
I think that's the worst.
Yes, or people that say because you think this, you're deluded. That's the one that gets on my tits. It really does. It's just like, no, I just happen to think differently from you. I'm not telling you that you should think like this, but at least respect the opinion that I have, you know, especially if you can back it up. If you're just sort of saying something because you don't quite know why, or you can't justify why you hold that opinion, then okay, fine. You can challenge me, but don't tell other people what to think or how they should think or that they're wrong for thinking something when that's just their opinion.
This is wisdom in one podcast. This is like the smartest podcast that we ever done. Thank you very much for that. And I think, Oscar, the next question.
Yeah, and I think you almost got to the question without us even asking it. So the next question is, how would you describe yourself as a supporter with three words?
That's a good question.
Thank you. I worked very hard with it.
Optimistic, but cautious, I think. I try and be optimistic. I go into every season, the start of every season, and I feel like we can win everything. The start of the season, it's just something that I've had since I was a kid. You know, you go, it's Arsenal. Of course, they can win. They can win everything. And I do try and find the positive spin or the positive angle as much as possible, which isn't to say I won't be critical or I won't criticize or I don't feel that there are things that are negative or could be improved on. But I feel like it's important to try and express those criticisms in a constructive way, because anybody can, as you know, and we've seen over the last few months, anybody can stand up and shout and roar about what's wrong. But unless you can, I don't know, at least offer some kind of solution or some common sense to it, then it's worthless, you know? So maybe optimistic, but balanced. I'm not quite sure. Maybe those would do. Optimistic, balanced.
Smart.
Terrified.
And terrified to that. Yeah, sounds like every Arsenal fan, or at least some of them.
Some
terrified for 90 minutes.
Yeah, they do. I mean, some days I'm just like, oh my God, I don't know if I can cope with this. But, you know, then there's another part of you that goes, it's just football, and there's another game next week or in 3 days. So, you know.
But isn't it like why we do it? It's like,
yes,
emotional roller coaster for 90 minutes. And then if it's a win, we celebrate with a beer or something. If it's a loss, well, it's a new roller coaster next week.
And we still have the beer.
And we still have the beer. That's, like we said, it's the smartest podcast that we have ever done. All right. I think
that is it, though. I mean, I agree with you because it allows you to, A, escape, let's say, you know, everyone's got their own lives and everyone's got their own shit going on, their own problems or their own things, you know, whether it's kids or work or, you know, generally life. Football allows you a bit of an escape for a little while.
Yes.
And I think that's what's so great about it is that the other thing I think people forget is that the joy that we get from the great moments, we can't feel that without experiencing the heartache of the bad moments.
True. I think we're going to wrap the questions up with the last one.
Okay.
And it's one of the greatest questions, if you ask me. It's, are you a member of Arsenal Gothenburg?
I'm not.
You're not?
No.
All right.
Can I become a member of Arsenal Gothenburg?
I love that you ask. Of course I can. And if some other listeners would like to become members, you can check out our webpage, which is what, Oscar?
ArsenalGothenburg.se.
And there you go.
That's easy to remember.
Yes, it is. Thank you for that question. I think we just can start with, you know, what you said earlier, talk rubbish for about 30 minutes or so.
Sure.
And we hope to invite you to the Arsenal Gothenburg soon enough.
Yes.
Always welcome.
Thank you very much indeed. It's just, you know...
We kind of lost you there.
Hi.
Hi. We kind of lost you.
Wow. Did you hear that weird noise?
No, it was just quiet in our earphones.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. There was a really weird noise there. I don't know where it's come from, but.
Well, we know you fight with weird noises.
Yes. Yes.
Your biggest enemy.
Right. Well, look, I'm ready to carry on. So.
Yeah. All right. I think the last podcast we did, or actually you did, Oscar, was in London after the Spurs game, and after that it hasn't played any games. So, quick thoughts about the Spurs game before we move on.
Let me think. It's so long ago.
Yeah, I know. It's like 2 weeks, 1.5. But one thought that we had is, overall, has the quality of the North London Derby become, what do you say?
Worse. I think I can't really remember when we last time we had a good North London Derby, especially at home. When did Arsenal last play a good North London Derby? I reckon it would be in the FA Cup when we beat them 2-0.
Yeah.
2014. Is that the last good North London derby at home?
Maybe so. I mean, I think that's the thing, isn't it? When you're talking about what's a good North London derby, you know, for us, it's when Arsenal win. When Arsenal win convincingly and win well. But the general thing with North London derbies is that they're usually very tight games, always, depending. It doesn't really matter the quality of the teams. So I don't think the quality has declined. I think the two teams are closer together than they used to be. You know, Tottenham are better than they were. We're maybe not as good as we used to be around the time of the Invincibles, etc. So there's been a little bit of equalization in that regard. But I do subscribe very much to the notion that form goes out the window, whether it's good or bad, when it comes to the derby. And what surprised me about the game a couple of weeks ago was just how unintense it was. You know, I thought from both sides it wasn't a particularly intense encounter. So that, to me, that was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I agree on that. It's, for me, it was like two, or even that, one player from each team that was like really, you know, Martin Keown, old Patrick Vieira, and it was Granit Xhaka from us, and Wanyama from Tottenham, which, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were the only two kind of fighting like a derby.
Yeah, I thought Coquelin was...
Yeah, Coquelin was really good, yeah. Xhaka, Coquelin.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a strange sort of a game. It felt like a game that neither side wanted to lose, and that was reflected in the way they played.
Especially Spurs. When they play like three defensive midfielders just to destroy our, you know, offensive... Now Oscar is shaking his head. You don't agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like you shook your head.
You just gave me some bad throwbacks because I went to the game. And the two North London derbies I've been to have probably been two of the worst. It's the 1-1 game now, and it was the 1-1 game 2 years ago, which you went to as
yes,
well.
Yes.
That was also a horrible game.
I went to the one where we were 2-0 up and lost 3-2 at the Emirates. That was annoying.
Okay, so you win this competition.
And one last thought about this game. We talked about Arsenal not being as good as they has been, and the winter is coming. Is this game the beginning of Nightmare November?
It's difficult to say. I think the next two games will tell us whether that's true or not. You know, I don't think on paper, really, a 1-1 draw in the North London Derby is necessarily a bad result, to be perfectly honest. Even if it's disappointing not to beat them at home, I don't think in general terms it is a bad result, and particularly the way the two teams played on day, I don't think it was a bad result.
What's your opinion about Nightmare November in general? Because, yes, statistic is Arsenal's worst month of the season, but is it something that we supporters and, you know, social media like hype up? You know what I mean?
I think so, to a certain extent. I mean, there's no doubt it's been a terrible month for us at times where results have been really poor. But there have been months when when it's been good. Fewer months when it's been good, but there have been some. So, you know, I don't think you can go into a season, and players, I don't think the players will be going into a season going, oh, November, we're going to lose. I don't think they think about that. I think fans are much more invested in these superstitions or these looking for these patterns, and players don't really give a shit about that. They won't care, you know. But I think the next two games, obviously against Manchester United, against PSG, will be a real test. And if we can come through those well, then people will say, well, you know, November's not as bad as we thought it was going to be. And if we struggle, then of course it confirms that bias in a way that November is the worst month of all time.
How do you think it's going to go in November?
Speaking of it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was maybe a little bit more confident about Manchester United and about November before we had the news about Hector Bellerin's injury and before we had the news about Alexis. I'm still not fully comfortable with the idea that he's going to be available for the weekend. You know, it looks to me as if he was a guy who was willing to push himself through the pain of an injury for his country because it was such an important game. And look, if he's played with a bad hamstring and scored two goals against Uruguay, he's an amazing man and an amazing player. But I'll wait until we get the all clear from Arsene Wenger. When he talks to the press and he says, yes, Alexis is available to start, then I'll be more comfortable with it. I have a suspicion that perhaps there's still room for bad news in that regard.
Yeah, but because like the comments Wenger did before the Chile game, they were, how many times have you heard him say like it would be suicidal to play Alexis Sanchez in a game? I think that's the first time I've heard him say something like that.
Yeah, same. Like he very rarely comments in that regard. So he was obviously concerned based on the information that he'd received. And I think we have to, as much as we like to think we know a lot, we probably have to accept that Arsene Wenger knows a little bit more than we do about these things. So it was a little bit worrying that he was quite so strident about that injury, you know.
And the funny thing is, talking about Nightmare November, hard to say in English. It's much easier in Swedish. And injuries, I actually have some statistics things, and I don't usually have that. But listen, Nightmare November injuries. I have some stats from 2009, injuries through November. Starting with 2009, Robin van Persie, injured for 5 months. Bentner, 3 months, how do you say?
Months.
Clichy, 10 weeks. 2010, Fabregas, 1 month.
Month.
2011, Diaby, 4 months, Gibbs, 3 months, Jenkinson, 3 months, 2012, Andres Santos,
what a player,
what a godish player, 2 months, Sagna, 1 month, Gervinho, another player, 1 month, 2013, Wilshere, 2 weeks, Sagna, 2 weeks, 2014, Wilshere, 5 months, Arteta, 2 months, Walcott, 1 month, Chesney, 2 weeks, so 2015, Cazorla, 4 months, Coquelin, 9 weeks, Alexis, 6 weeks, Arteta, 1 month, 2016, this November, Alexis injured for how long, we don't know, Hector Bellerin, for how long is that? Like,
I think it's three, four weeks.
The classic, 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, we don't know.
Another aspect of it, it's statistic, the amount that we get most injuries.
But doesn't that reflect on, like, when we get to November, the players have been, I reckon, like, until November you have these international breaks, you play international football, and from November on to February or March, you don't have the international breaks, so the players don't, of course we play a lot of games, but I think it's just the season has really started in November, and we
have played a few games, and I think it's quite natural that the injuries start to drop in by then, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good point. The international breaks, the travel, the interruptions, the different training schedules, different training routines when they go away with their countries, all those things could play a part.
Absolutely, absolutely. But look, that was November. We kind of thought that we talk a little bit about the games that has been. Now we played 11 games and a couple of Champions League games and League Cup games. What's your thought about the opening for the season?
Much more encouraged than I was at the end of the first day, I have to say. You know, we still haven't lost a game since August.
That's true.
But
isn't it so that Arsenal lost one game the last 8 months?
Yeah, it's something ridiculous, all right. I'd have to go back and check the fixtures on that.
Please keep on doing that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, look, the performances haven't always been convincing. Yeah, I mean, the last game we lost in the Premier League, apart from the opening day of the season, was in March. And that was against Swansea. So that was a bit of a disappointing one. But look, I think you've got to be encouraged because, A, we look like a much more difficult team to beat. B, we look like we're not as self-destructive as we used to be. And C, I think the football is better this season. The way that we're playing with Alexis up front, with Iwobi, with Walcott, with Ozil, sort of much more fluid in that front four. I think it looks much more like an Arsene Wenger team than last season's team, which really, really struggled to play the kind of football that we associate with Arsene Wenger. So it's good to see a return to the style of football that's become synonymous with Arsene Wenger. And I think our chances of success and winning something is much greater when we're playing the way we're playing this season.
We talked earlier in this podcast that the difference between this season and last season is that we got the hard 3 points, you know what I mean? Like the Burnley 1-0 game. And now the 2-1 win against, Southampton?
Southampton, yeah. And that's the stat I've been going back and forward to the last couple of seasons. It's like how few games we turned around from going a goal down in the Premier League. I think when you sum up the two last seasons, I think it's the games we've gone down a goal and then gone on to win is like 3 games. It's an opening game against Crystal Palace, the Leicester game, the 5-2 game against Leicester away. I think those are like the three games in the Premier League we basically turned around. So that's one thing that's been worrying me for a long time, and I think maybe we're starting to see some brightening on that side as well.
But I agree with you on that, Andrew, that Arsenal this season play like Arsenal.
Yeah, and I think there's probably... Arsene Wenger said the team is mature now, and I think if you look through the squad, it really is a mature side. You know, there are some young players in there who add some vitality. You look at Hector and you look at Alex Iwobi. But, you know, look around the rest of the squad and, you know, Koscielny, hugely experienced, Giroud, Cazorla, Mesut Ozil, Alexis Sanchez, guys who are in the best years of their career and should be playing the best football of their careers. And I think, you know, we're seeing a bit of that too. And I think there's a mentality as well. You can see that this is a team that, like we saw against Burnley, okay, we got a bit lucky. We got a little bit lucky against Burnley, and I think we got a little bit lucky against Southampton to win the game late. It was a penalty, wasn't it, Santi Cazorla?
Yeah, Santi Cazorla, like minute 94 or something.
Yeah, so, you know, there is an element of luck to it, but there's also, this is what happens when you keep going and when you keep trying in games, that, you know, something can happen very late on, and we've seen it down the years. Plenty of teams have won lots of points in the last 5 or 10 minutes of games, which have proved to be very important when it comes to who's winning the title at the end of May.
So if we maybe look a bit forward to the Man United game, if, let's say, I said it before, I don't count on Alexis playing this weekend, and if he were to play, it would be a happy surprise, but I don't count on him playing this weekend.
But how do we set up our team if we want to keep the movement? Because I'm worried if we bring on Giroud that the movement will go in the team.
I tend to agree with you regarding Alexis. I would probably be surprised if he played. He might be on the bench, so that could be something, obviously, that we keep in reserve. I do wonder, obviously, when you play Giroud up front, it's very different from when you play Alexis. He doesn't vacate the space for the others to move into the same way that Alexis does. He doesn't drop as deep and leave space for Ozil and Iwobi and Walcott in particular to burst into and score goals. So I do want, if you've got to look for the movement to come from elsewhere. So you've got to maybe have somebody from midfield who can bypass Giroud, who can make runs off him, who's looking to get into the box. And I wonder if Aaron Ramsey might be the guy to do that.
Yeah, maybe. Interesting thought. And one thing that I thought about when you say Alexis and the movement up front is one of the best thing this season so far is, yes, it's been Alexis Sanchez, which has been like perfect this season. But it's also his movement that's made more space for Mesut Özil, who comes through these runs we've seen all this season.
Yeah,
I think that one of the three best things this season is one, Alexis, two, I gotta say Koscielny, and three, Mesut Özil's run in through the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously looking to score more goals. He seems very determined to make an impact in terms of scoring goals, which is great to see because the quality of his finishing is excellent, and he gets himself in good positions. And what's interesting as well is that maybe it'll happen where defenders start to pay attention to him, but because he's not necessarily known for scoring goals, it's almost as if the defenders, when they see him, don't think of him as such an immediate threat. They might think that he's going to try another pass or try and create something, and instead he's finishing from positions where you would expect the striker to be at times. So, I think that's a really positive thing. I think ultimately he'll probably end up with more assists than goals by the time the season is out, but it's been great to see him because it is adding something different to our attacking play, and we've been looking for a bit of that. You know, if you can't find a striker to bring in from outside, and I know we brought in Lucas Perez, but he's obviously a guy who's not brought to be the first choice striker. He's brought in to add some quality and add some depth to the squad, and I think he does that very well. But to find a different way, a less predictable way of attacking, and obviously Alexis does that, and Mesut Ozil, he's a big part of it too.
And speaking of Ozil and Alexis, Ozil just bought a billion, should we say,
£10 million house, I think.
And that's drives me to the thought, is he going to sign the contract? Because basically Alexis and Ozil's contracts are running out soon. And
Hector Bellerin's contract doesn't run out, but he is still thought to be signing a new contract as well.
And I know that you talked about this in Ars Cost, but what's your thoughts about the contract? Are they going to sign new contract, or how important is it that they sign new contract? And you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's hugely important because they're two of our best players. So you want to keep them in the peak years of their footballing careers. I think if you ask me to put money on it right now, I would say I would definitely put some money on Mesut Ozil signing a new contract. I'm not saying anybody out there should take their wages and go to the shop and put it on, but I'm just saying if I had some money, that's what I would do. I'm not necessarily convinced about Alexis yet.
Oh, shit. Why not?
I just from what I think and a few little things that I hear, that it's not quite as certain as the Ozil one. I feel like he's a bit more of a wandering spirit.
Yeah, like, I know what you mean. Yeah.
If he might want to go somewhere else and have like a good 3-4 years at a club, go to a different club. A good 3-4 years at a club and go to a different club. And the end of this Arsenal contract would give him a chance to do that. Now, Arsenal, of course, can make him an offer that he finds very difficult to refuse. You know, they could offer him a really great wage, and they could offer him an escape clause or a release clause, not an escape clause. He's looking for a release clause, I believe, to be put in his contract. But it would obviously be dependent on his valuation and what Arsenal value him at and what Arsenal would be prepared to let him go at. So I think it's more complicated. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think it's a lot more complicated than the Mesut Ozil one, who really likes it in London, who is enjoying his football, whose stature in the team has grown. And I think that one's pretty much nailed on, but I think Alexis is a bit more complicated. But just to talk about how important I think it is, I think it's really important. And if it was a case, let's say, that there could be no agreement found with Alexis Sanchez, that he said, look, I'm not going to sign a new contract. If you let him go, you have got to replace him with a player of similar stature, or at least the stature that Alexis was when we bought him.
But isn't that going to put us back against the wall? Because if we don't keep Alexis Sanchez, who's going to, you know, come to us, to Arsenal, to, you know, you need a good group, a good squad, sure, to add more good players to the squad. If we, yep, let Alexis go, I don't think that any really, really good players are that interested to, you know, go to us to be one of the big two.
Yeah,
no,
maybe.
We need more good players to have, you know what I mean?
Sure, but we brought in Mesut Ozil without having that guy there. And then, obviously, when you bring in Alexis, you can say, look, you're coming to play with Mesut Ozil. But then, even if Alexis leaves, we can still say to the guy coming in, look, you're going to play with Mesut Ozil. He's going to be providing the ammunition for you to smack the ball into the net, you know. But it's trying to identify who that talent is. But players move all the time. Players move from one club to another, from big clubs to other big clubs. And in England, we're not always ready for it the way that they are in Spain, let's say, or Italy, you know. Particularly in Italy down the years, you would see big players going from AC Milan to Juventus and then from Juventus to Inter Milan. And you're going, well, hang on.
Yeah. It happens all the time.
In England, you don't have that. You don't get a player who goes from Manchester United to Liverpool, then Liverpool to Arsenal. You know, the merry-go-round doesn't quite work that way.
The closest thing I can think of is William Gallagher, who played, wasn't it Chelsea, Arsenal and Tottenham?
Yeah, but I was talking about big teams.
Yeah. Remember? Good points.
And we know you don't like Gallas as well. He's not a big player.
He's the worst. I have so much bad memories with him. Yeah. Move on.
Yeah. So, yeah, look, I think Arsenal have got some work to do to convince Alexis to stay, but I think it's hugely important that they do. And even if they don't, there are ways of countering that. You know, you've just got to get on with it and find somebody else who can do what he does, which is not easy, of course, because he's so good.
If we offer him the best dog kindergarten in whole of London, do you think that's going to help?
Absolutely, yeah.
Or like get his Anthem and Humber a million followers on Instagram just for him to stay. Do you think that's going to help?
Probably not, but you know, jeez. I think every little thing that you can do will make a difference. So, you know, yeah, let's get him some Adam and Humber, you know, dressing gowns and get them some presents, see if that might make
a
difference.
Get them some good dog ladies as well.
Yes.
So everyone, hear this, go online on Instagram and follow Adam and Humber official, I think it is. Not that I follow it, I just know this for some strange reason.
Yeah.
Do you follow them, Mr. Andrew, since you love the dogs?
I don't know if I do, actually. I don't know. I could do, actually. I just can't remember.
Well, check it out. Two beautiful dogs. And every once in a while, I get to see a bit of Alexis, actually, which is a good thing to see. Well, speaking forward in time, we talked some of the Manchester United game, but coming back to that, we have, like we said, Hector Bellerin injured.
Mm.
How's that affect us? And what the fuck has happened to Debuchy? Is it like buried somewhere in the ground or what?
No, he's had a calf injury, apparently. That's the line from Arsenal anyway. I think Bellerin affects us quite significantly because if you look around the difference between Kieran Gibbs and Nacho Monreal is nowhere near as big as the difference between Hector Bellerin and Carl Jenkinson. And I, you know, I like Jenkinson. He's a good lad and he loves Arsenal and he's a big fan. And I think we all respect that. We all like that. We all look at him and go, wow, he's living the dream.
Yeah, I have a friend actually who said comparing Hector Bellerin to Carl Jenkinson is comparing a new Ferrari to the first ever car you ever owned.
Oh, coincidentally, the first car I ever owned was a Ferrari.
Oh, you lucky bastard.
That's a complete lie, by the way.
But it's pretty much like that. You can't hate your first car. It's like your dearest thing you ever had, but it's not as good nearly as the Ferrari you just bought.
True. And I mean, that is true. It does affect us because Bellerin has become so important and he's very important to the way we attack down that right-hand side. Defensively, he's very switched on. He's made some crucial interventions. And he is just one of the best right-backs in Europe. So it's a blow. But I think that's just part and parcel of football. You know, you're not going to have your best 11 fit every single game. And you've got to find ways to cope. And that's part of the challenge of winning a league title. You've got to go through periods when you don't have your best players there. I remember during the Invincible season, I think it was when Lauren was injured and everybody thought, well, what's he going to do? I can't remember exactly how he solved that problem now, but I know that Justin Hoyt played some games.
Yeah.
And Pascal Seguin came into the center of defense when Sol Campbell was injured.
Jesus Christ.
You know, so there are – you are always going to miss players – but missing them doesn't necessarily mean that your chances of winning a game or winning the league are completely scuppered. It means that other players are going to have to step up to try and fill that gap a little bit. You know, that the guys who can really make an impact, I've got to do that because otherwise you could get a bit found out. So it's up to everybody to raise their level and to try and offset the absence of the players who aren't there.
True. Another thing, what's your thought about, because Wenger has talked some that Mustafi could play right back and Rob Holding in center half. What's your opinion about that?
I would be very cautious about that. I wouldn't necessarily say that's the way that we should approach this weekend. You know, the central defensive partnership is one. I don't think it's perfect. It's been very effective. Koscielny and Mustafi, I don't think they haven't gelled perfectly yet. You know, there's still a little bit of development.
I agree.
To go on between them. So what I wouldn't do is break up that partnership to add in, to play Mustafi out of position and to bring in Rob Holding alongside Koscielny. And I think Holding's a good young player, but I'm not sure that giving him Old Trafford this weekend is the right move for him or for Arsenal. So I think you've got to play Jenkinson, who's a natural right back, play him there, and then, as I said, look for the other players in this team to try and make the difference as well.
Yeah, I agree. And it would not be fair to put Rob Holding on the spot like that on Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Speaking of it, how do you want to play the squad this Saturday? You say that play the squad. No, you don't. You say
what team would I pick?
Yeah, exactly. What team would you pick?
Well, I think if everyone were fit, what would I do? You know, I mean, we're looking at Cech, Jenkinson, Mustafi, Koscielny,
Monreal.
Midfield, I think, is going to be interesting because he might look at something away from home and look at Coquelin as a guy. But I have a suspicion that he wants to play Xhaka and Ramsey together. But again, I'm not sure if this is necessarily the way or the game to try it out for the first time, you know? So I think he might go with Coquelin, whether it's with Xhaka or whether it's with Ramsey. I'm not 100% sure yet. He'll obviously play Ozil. He'll play Iwobi. He'll play Walcott. And then depending on the fitness of Alexis, it'll either be Alexis or Giroud, but my suspicion is it'll probably be Giroud.
All right. So what's your thought, Oscar?
Do you think there's any chance that maybe for me, Awobi hasn't been that good the last couple of games, that he gets rested and maybe Ramsey gets stuck on a wing.
No, I don't think so, because that would mean playing Ramsey from the left, which he very rarely plays there. And if you play Ramsey from the right, then you've got to play Theo Walcott on the left, and he's really not terribly effective there. You could play Oxlade-Chamberlain on the left, of course. But I think Iwobi just has that little something in the way that he links midfield and attack, and the way that he can see spaces for runners, particularly when he's switching the play. I think he'll go with Iwobi.
Speaking of Iwobi, which been one of the bright spots this season, what's your thought about him? Because honestly, this last game against Spurs, he wasn't that good. We can all agree on that, right?
Yeah, I think we can agree on that. I think what we're looking at is a young player who has made a big, big breakthrough in the last 12 months, and who is, I'm not going to say struggling, but who's just sort of hit a little bit of a plateau. And this is what happens with young players, is that they perform to a certain level, then their performance level, it sort of plateaus, and then it goes up again and does that, you know, takes that kind of trajectory. So he's got 3 assists. He hasn't scored yet this season. He had a great chance to score against Spurs, and he'll be disappointed that he didn't do that, because I think that could have kickstarted his season. But I just think there's something about him and the way that he plays that's different from Oxlade-Chamberlain. It's a bit more controlled. But even though Oxlade-Chamberlain is more experienced, and Oxlade-Chamberlain has got 5 goals this season, which I think we overlook. At times, you know, he's done pretty well.
Is it 5 goals?
Yeah, he's got 5 goals.
Holy shit. It's like he scored 5 goals through his all Arsenal career, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's the best season he's ever had. So he has made some progress. But I just think for a game like this, he might look at Oxlade-Chamberlain as somebody who can make a difference from the bench more than from the start.
Because speaking of Iwobi, what was I thinking about? Yes, the question earlier to you, Rice and Rose, is one of the things I thought about with Arsenal. I love that they're good with youngsters and everything like that. But sometimes I think maybe Arsene Wenger, and I know I like swear in the church right now, but he puts too much, what do you say, too much comfort,
pressure.
No, not pressure, comfort in the youngsters, so they don't feel any...
Competition
in the group. You're like, Iwobi, you're 19, 20 years old, but you're my first choice on the left through the whole the season. You know what I mean? We see that with young players through the years. I think the same thing happened to Chamberlain, basically, and perhaps Jack Wilshere as well, that you don't get that competition that you need as a young player. Sure, you need to play the 90 minutes and the play time on the pitch, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do, but I also think that when it comes to picking his team, he picks a team based on what he thinks can win the game or is the best team to win the game, and not a team that makes one guy feel more comfortable. Do you know what I'm saying?
He's, I
do see your point, but I think it's more to do with what he thinks Iwobi can bring to the team than trying to protect him or trying to mollycoddle him in some way. I think when he picked Iwobi away at Barcelona in the Champions League last season, that was a big show of faith in him.
Yes.
And
isn't that still like his best game he ever played for us? He was brilliant that game.
Yeah, he was absolutely great. He was great in a few other games as well, you know, but I think we have our memories of a bit short term, that we can overlook the good stuff because 2 or 3 bad games, or not necessarily bad games, but games where he hasn't performed as well as people would expect. I think he's a guy who's got something a little bit special. We haven't really seen it yet in an Arsenal shirt. And it feels like something, he needs a goal or he needs a performance to really help him kick on. And it would be like, it would be amazing if he could do that at Old Trafford.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And like I said, he's a brilliant player. He's huge potential in that guy.
I actually wrote
wrote?
No. Read an article about this that I thought was a bit harsh. It was the Telegraph, who named Iwobi as one of the 10 worst players this season, one of the 10 biggest letdowns this season. And I think that's taking way over the top.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. There are far worse players this season than Alex Iwobi. So,
Man United.
Yeah, exactly. But guys, it's been a pleasure, but I've got to go.
Yes, I understand. Thank you very much for your time, Andrew.
Not at all. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed the chat.
And hopefully we'll talk soon again.
Yeah, you just let me know, and I'm happy to come back on when you need me. Yeah.
I feel very honored. One last thing before we go. What's your prediction on Saturday?
Oh.
You do that.
I know you hate this question.
My prediction is that we're going to lose. And I say that not because I want to be like the guy who said we were going to lose and then we win, like I'm trying to jinx it. I just, you know, I look at Old Trafford, I look at Manchester United, I look at Mourinho, and I've just been there too many times to think anything other than we're going to lose.
Shit, you're right about it. Yes.
So, like, you know, obviously, that I hope I'm completely wrong.
Yeah.
I'd love to be completely wrong, and I will enjoy it immensely if I'm wrong. But maybe it's a self-defense mechanism. I'm just, like, telling myself we're going to lose, so when it happens, it won't be too bad. But I think in saying that we have a group of players who are capable of going there and getting a result. So let's hope I'm as wrong as I've ever been.
I hope that you're 100% wrong. And once again, Andrew, thank you very much. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a million.
Cheers. Ja, det var då det från Andrew Ars blogg Mangan och... Ja, vad ska jag säga, Oskar? Som sagt, kolla in han på Ars blogg och lyssna gärna på Arscast där han pratar väldigt mycket bra och mycket om Arsenal.
Ja, mycket humor, mycket skratt, bra analyser utav Arsenal skulle jag vilja sammanfatta det som, en podcastlyssnare som har ändå lyssnat väldigt länge på Arscast och som lyssnar på väldigt många podcastar.
Sant, och speaking of Ars blogg så kommer också vår intervju, eller vårt podcastavsnitt med Ramesh Shaban, att finnas där på Ars blogg i översatt och komprimerad form. Och även på vår hemsida, Arsenal i Göteborg eller goteborg.se. Om ni vill tipsa några utländska Arsenal-vänner om den, vad Shaban hade att säga om hans tid i Arsenal.
Ja, det är väl väldigt stort att den får ändå finnas på en sån stor plattform som Ars blogg.
Absolut, och det är, tror alla så här, vad bra jobbat Filip och Oskar och Tobias. Nej, det är det inte, utan det är bra jobbat Theodor Landén, som är medlem av Arsenal Göteborg, som har suttit och arbetat sig svettig sena nätter med att översätta och komprimera och dola och fixa. Så gå gärna in på arsenalgoteborg.se eller Ars blogg för att se hur han har fått ihop det helt enkelt.
Ja, det tycker jag verkligen alla ska göra, och ja, efter en sån här intervju så är man väl ganska tom. Det finns inte så mycket mer att säga.
Nej, utan som sagt, vi möter United på lördag. Och då kommer väl vi vara på Cheers Pub som vanligt och skrika och hesa och skåla om det går bra. Och kasta glas i väggen kommer vi ju kanske inte göra, men vi kommer svära om det går dåligt. Och vill du sitta och skåla och jubla eller svära med oss, så kom gärna till Cheers Pub.
Ja, det tycker jag ni verkligen ska göra.
Fint, fint, Oskar. Jag sträcker fram min näve. Tusen tack för att du kom och hjälpte till.
Tack så mycket för att jag fick vara med och fick göra en podcast med min stora podcastidol.
Ja, det är fantastiskt. Det är stort.
Starstruck, fast på över Skype.
Ja, men det är alltid början. Nästa gång sitter han kanske vid fikabordet här bredvid oss och delar vår kalla kaffe med oss.
Jag
blev så torr i munnen när vi pratade med honom. Märktes det, tror du? Att jag blev så torr i munnen av allt kaffe. Så jag så här, hade svårt att uttala vissa ord, som till exempel month.
Ja,
ja
det... Så nu får vi nog
tune out här, så får vi helt enkelt tolfen öva på sämman.
Jag har ett förslag bara innan vi avslutar, att det kan ju bli en dryckeslek för ni som vill lyssna, att varje gång jag uttalar month fel så tar ni en shot. Då får ni en jävla bra. Det kan man göra efter lördagsmatchen mot United. Ja, kanske inte. Det kan ni göra på fredag. Då får ni en jävla bra fredagskväll.
Ja, det tycker jag. Så många som möjligt borde ta efter detta. Vi är bra före den, men känner jag.
The new drinking game. Philip Tolfs month drinking game. Ja, ja. Oskar, som sagt, tusen tack för att du har varit här och hjälpt till. Och mest tack ska väl ni lyssnare för att ni har lyssnat på när vi har sagt month och annat smått och gott.
Ja, vi får väl be om ursäkt för lite stabbiga ord och så vidare, men vi gör vårt bästa helt enkelt.
Så kan det gå. Kära lyssnare och vänner, tusen tack för att ni har lyssnat. Oh, to be a gooner.